If you like things that fly fast and zoom through space, the annual Air Force Association Conference and Expo is the place you want to be. It's also the place to catch the technology and policy trends for the Air Force. That's why Tom Temin is at National Harbor this morning, and he's joined by retired General Craig McKinley, president of the Air Force Association. Tom?
Thank you, Emily, and General McKinley, great to have you on.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
All right, so let's start with the association and the conference itself. What is going on here this week?
Well, this is our annual Air and Space Conference. You've been doing this with us for years, and quite frankly, it's one of the highlights of our year. We're at the Gaylord, obviously, and we have a large exposition, and we have great leaders from the Pentagon and around the Air Force. And with all the things going on in the world today, it's a very important time to hear from our national leaders.
So is this primarily a conference that is attended by industry, or do you have a lot of people from the Air Force down to the airman, you know, operator level here this week?
It's a great mix of folks. It is the government leadership with Secretary Hagel and Secretary Johnson and a number of other great key figures. It's our leadership of the Air Force with Secretary James, General Welsh, and Chief Cody. And it's also the Outstanding Airmen of the Year, which you'll see running around here. They're great young men and women who represent the finest that the Air Force has.
All right, so let's talk about the challenges of the Air Force itself these days that will be addressed here. And we'll get into some of the technology later on. But the Air Force is under pressure size-wise, and yet it's also under pressure operationally right now.
You bet. You know, we're a joint force. We're part of the Joint Force Fighting Team, and the Air Force is no more stressed or any more under-resourced than any of our other services, but you asked specifically about the Air Force. You know, we've been at war, theoretically, with planes or boots in the air for over 30 years now, from the initial no-fly zones of Iraq till present day. We know our nation has a debt problem, and we, our leadership, that I've been very impressed with, have decided that they're going to take action and streamline the Air Force and make it a 21st century force. So all those pressures to bear mean it's challenging times, but all the services and their leadership are experiencing the same thing.
All right, so the there are reductions in both personnel, and they're talking about different platforms retiring, and of course that's a debatable topic, and it is being debated right now in Congress. But is that a concern here? I mean, what are people saying?
Well, we're at that inflection point in the Air Force where retirement of legacy systems is important so that we can modernize and move forward. Congress, obviously, are the final decision makers, and we respect their decision making. And it was a tough year on the Hill because there are differences of opinion. But having been in the Air Force and the Air National Guard for 38 years, there's trade-offs that have to be made. And when that occurs, obviously, will be decided by the Congress. But our leadership has got to bring forward those things which they think are appropriate so that we can move forward with modernization and keep a very ready force.
Now, there are some things happening on the modernization front that are positive. The tanker program seems to be coming along. What do you hear about that, and will that any of that be featured here this week?
We've got a number of great exhibitors, and Boeing is one of them. Obviously, Northrop Grumman is our presenting sponsor, but there's a number of displays at the Gaylord where people can see the new technology. You referred to the KC-46. Boeing won that competition. They've got a great aircraft. They're working the problems that they would obviously have with a new airplane. But we're very excited with a new air refueling tanker. It's what makes the Air Force unique of all the air forces of the world, our speed, our range, and our lethality.
So has that plane flown? Have you seen it? I mean, it's flown. Has it done any refueling yet? What stage are they at?
They're in testing and pre-testing. They're right on schedule, and the folks at Boeing have assured the United States Air Force leadership that everything will be on track. You know, Air Force air-to-air refueling is one of the things that that make us able to get up, get in the air, get places very quickly, deploy rapidly to support national leadership. It's very important that this airplane stay on track.
Okay, and then the other coming platform, which seems to be making some progress, is the F-35. Is that going to be featured here, and will there be discussions of that platform?
You bet. The Lockheed Martin folks are here, and we always appreciate what they bring to the fight. They've got a number of systems that they're working on. The F-35 is an exciting new system. It's a stealth fighter. It's a fifth-gen fighter, and it's got a lot of capabilities to network and to help in the battle space with intelligence gathering. So it's a very exciting airplane. It is in test phase. The Lockheed Martin folks briefed us yesterday that it's on track. They're very excited about the 100th airplane coming off the line. They're still in low-rate production, but they've got the plane where it needs to be. There's going to be challenges to everything. We had the engine fire down at Eglin Air Force Base a few weeks ago, and Pratt & Whitney's working those things out. This is the evolution of a new system, and the Air Force and all our allied nations are very excited about the aircraft.
All right, so looking at the Air Force today versus when you were active duty, what are the big changes that you've seen over the past few years?
Well, you know, I would make a joke that when I started, we were flying cloth-winged airplanes, but we have...
Well, you're not that old.
No, I know. But, you know, the T-38, for example, was our primary jet trainer when I was in flight training. We're still flying it 50 years later. What people will see if they come by the Gaylord are four versions of new aircraft trainers that we might bring on if the resources are available. We need to give the young men and women who are getting into the business now the best training possible as they get ready for these new aircraft. So obviously the Air Force has changed dramatically, but let me just say one thing, point of privilege. Our chairman, George Molnar, and I had the pleasure of dedicating our building over on Lee Highway to James Doolittle, Jimmy Doolittle.
Sure.
And so as things change, many things go back to be the same. He was our first president of AFA. Jimmy Doolittle on April 18, 1942, led a raid that got us, picked us back up after Pearl Harbor, got us into World War II in a big way, knowing that we could recover. So we live on the shoulders of our great heroes of Hap Arnold and Doolittle and Spots. But we now have these new modern-day men and women who make us look like pikers in terms of our capabilities, and we're so proud of these young men and women that you'll see running around here today.
We're speaking with Craig McKinley, retired Air Force General and President of the Air Force Association. So in honor of General Doolittle, there's no B-25 still down there on the floor at this particular expo, huh?
No, we tried to find a model of it, and there are models. With 3D printing, you can make a model, but we didn't quite get it here this time. But we're going to have one in our building for
people. All
right,
so maybe it'll be 25 days over National Harbor instead of 25 seconds over Tokyo.
You certainly know your history. Thank you.
So with respect to the airmen or people coming into the Air Force these days, the skill set required and the kinds of backgrounds that you need for today's Air Force is not quite the same as it was 25 or 50 years ago either.
The technological skills that most of our young men and women need to possess or be able to be trained to possess are remarkable. Technology is one of our asymmetric advantages as the United States of America. So the young men and women who we recruit, and we need to recruit between 30 and 50,000 between the active duty guard and reserve every year, have got to come to us highly educated in a condition where they can adapt to the fitness standards, which only one in four young men and women can qualify to join our services, which is a tough thing to process.
It's the Pop-Tart generation.
It is. But, you know, on the cyber side, which the Air Force and all the services participate in, it's not necessarily the dynamic that you would look for in somebody else in terms of capability. You want somebody who can work in the high-tech world, in the cyber geekery world, and we want all people to feel like there's a place in the United States military for them.
So I imagine, speaking of the cyber command and the cyber mission in general, which is, goes across DOD, there's a purple command for that, and each service has its own. Is that something featured a lot? Must be a lot of software downstairs there, too.
You know, if I could characterize the 20-plus years I've been attending this conference, it has gone more from a platform-centric exhibit to more of the software, high-tech gadgetry that doesn't necessarily grab people of my vintage, but it grabs the young people today because that's what they're looking for. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's interesting. You can't see and touch it like you can the platforms that were mostly mechanical.
Well, we kid ourselves when we go down on the floor and we say there's a whole bunch of things you can't see, but they're all around us. So, but this year, at my request, we have an airship. We're going to fly an old airship through the exhibit hall. So a little air power right there in front of everybody. And
helium, I hope.
It's helium. It's not hydrogen.
All right, good. And speaking of, you know, flying it unmanned through the whole drone, the unmanned platform is something that has really exploded on the scene, I guess, since Secretary Gates kind of got this to the way we understand it today. It's not the newest thing, but it sure has come a long way. What about the unmanned platform and how that's affecting the show and the Air Force?
A great point. We're actually honoring former Chief of Staff of the Air Force, John Jumper, today with an award in his name. He was actually the Chief of Staff of the Air Force that pushed the Air Staff through to get the Predator drone and to have a weapon on that system. So we're going to honor General Jumper today with an award for remotely piloted aircraft. Those words are interchangeable, but what the press seems to flag on is a drone. A drone is not a thinking, living being. It is a piece of metal that's out there that has thousands of people behind it and decision makers to use it. So it's a very complex system of systems, but you're absolutely right. It has been a game changer, and I think it's protected a lot of lives.
Now, sorry to bring up the Navy at the Air Force conference, but they recently completed tests of a carrier landing, mm-hmm. which manned aircraft and unmanned aircraft were landed alternatively. And that was a big deal. I think they did it twice around, but it was still more than they'd ever done before. What's the Air Force doing with respect to mixing manned and unmanned flights and operations, and where do they stand there?
I think that's the technological future, and I give Admiral Greenert, the Chief of Naval Operations, a great deal of credit, and the United States Navy. Air power is not just the Air Force. It's everybody. Everybody who flies or is in space or in cyber is part of an air team. So Admiral Greenert is pushing his team to get carrier-based remotely piloted aircraft. Our remotely piloted aircraft will work in a system of systems so that they can talk to each other, that they can give people on the decision real-time information that they can make and evaluate movements on. And our United States Army has a number of remotely piloted aircraft that when we all work together, when all this synchronizes, it's like a symphony, and I think that's what the nation deserves.
And just one other question, you know, the nuclear part of the triad, the Air Force part of the nuclear triad, I should say, had some issues, some challenges, some problems over the past year, and there have been a lot of steps taken to get past that. Do the leadership that you're in touch with now feel that they have got that one under control now?
Very impressed with Secretary James and her rapid movement to learn the issues that were affecting the United States Air Force, that career field, taking appropriate action. And from our feedback that we're getting from our members, and we have over 100,000 members nationwide, is that the places that have missile career fields are really back up on their feet. They're feeling good about themselves, and I commend Secretary James for that action.
All right. Retired General Craig McKinley is president of the Air Force Association. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure every year.